we amusing ourselves to death, as Neil Postman once argued? Or as Bill and Ted once said, I believe our adventure through time has taken a most serious turn. The City of Dreams is already a nightmare. Dark Alleyways of Screen and Media podcast identifies the concerns, idiocy, and seedier side of Hollywood and the industry. What the hell are we going to be discussing?
Okay. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Dark Alleyways of Screen and Media podcast. I'm Ash.
I'm Marina.
Alex.
Yeah, and have you guys noticed that in the last 5 to 6 years, there's been a lot more scandals coming out of Screen and Media, particularly Hollywood?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and the funny thing is, it's a number of these things, it's not that shocking. Like, everybody's known that the media business has always been a sleazy business. There's been dark, shady things happening. I mean, if you look at, you know, Hollywood from the 50s, 60s, 70s, none of this stuff is new.
So even from the Marilyn Monroe era.
Yeah, I mean, we look at that in a different light today. But everybody knew back then that there was beyond the glitz and glam. That was like the type of the way that it was sold. But it's so interesting that in the last 5, maybe in the last 10 years, there's been this, you know, the scandals that just keep coming. They seem to be happening more and more often.
But that also coincides with the introduction of social media. So with the fact that people can control their own social media accounts, or most people can, that they have more of a voice. And when people have more of a voice, more things actually come out. And so that's why I think you've got the Epstein's that's coming out, the quiet on sets that are coming on out, where it's always happened, but now we're hearing more of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, but I guess, so like, social media definitely plays a role in being able to spread the word, especially people who have witnessed, you know, horrible things, debauchery, depravity, can speak about it. But there's something else, I think, that's afoot, because, you know, even if you did speak about it, the people in the industry that are so powerful, they have a way of squashing all that. So, we talked about, there's Harvey Weinstein. And you just mentioned Jeffrey Epstein. Now we've heard about P. Diddy, the quiet on set. These are really powerful people who, at the time when this was happening, people were afraid to speak out. So even if you speak out on social media now, people are worried about, you know, defamations. There's like the NDAs. So it's almost like the fact that all this is coming out now, It seems to be, it's almost its own form of entertainment.
Totally. It's reality TV on steroids.
On steroids, yeah.
Yeah, but every cat and a dog has something to say about it too, which I guess in the past you had a few gatekeepers who would write an article about this, would allege something. It would go to court. It would probably get lost in, you know, articles and stuff, because maybe no one really cared about it. But now you've got people who are detectives on Twitter who follow every affidavit, every announcement,
dissect it.
Yeah, and it's.
But that's a good thing, though.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a terrible thing too. I mean, it's just that as social media has scaled up, this is scaled up too. And you had what, the 24-hour news cycle, when you had like all those 24-hour channels like CNN and everything. This is just the extension of that now, I guess. So yeah, it could be. We know about the scandal, but the amount of scandal and the intensity it comes at and the velocity can keep up. That's probably where it's at.
What I'm wanting to see more of is now everything's out in the open, especially with the quiet on set. What I'm interested in is, how is that going to translate moving forward, and how do we protect people? Or is it like, okay, we know this now, we know this is the industry, and we'll continue to sweep it under the carpet because we still need to make movies?
How much change do you think has happened since Harvey Weinstein got exposed?
I think women are a lot more vocal, or people are a lot more vocal in what is happening. But I have no doubt it's still going on.
Do you think it's possible that now, I mean, obviously people came forward back then, but the machine itself is a bit more prepared? So defamation lawsuits coming forward?
NDAs.
And the other factor being that when it's almost like because in certain things were considered an open secret. Mm. So now they find more effective ways to hide it and have more effective bribes.
Mm. I understand with NDAs, because you want to keep things secret, like what's happening on, like what screenwriting, what's going on set, etc. But I think NDAs should be null and void once something criminal starts happening, once something civil starts happening, and people need to open up to stop any future issues that come about.
But most NDAs are a result of a settlement, right? And a settlement makes sense for some people because at the end of the day, it doesn't verify whether the allegations were true. On the other hand, it doesn't say that you were at fault. People don't want to go through the process necessarily because it may be traumatic. The NDAs can maybe function as a way to just sort the problem out where the two parties, because it's between the two parties, I don't necessarily agree to this because it might be enough to say we're done and dusted. Now, whether that stops behaviour, that's another story. You know, behaviour that's consistent.
Of course
over
it doesn't
time.
Stop the behaviour, I mean, because they're hiding behind this NDA.
Yeah, and that's the problem, I think.
You know, like whenever stuff like this happens, there's always... People love the scandal, but there are a lot of people that are looking, okay, what's the way forward from here? Are things going to improve? And a lot of people want to know if that's the case. I personally think that because of, you know, all these things that have been happening for decades upon decades where, and again, remember the word, the casting couch?
Yes.
Everybody knew about that word, and that's been around for so long. So that means everybody knew that was, you know, like all the other phrase they say, you know, you're sleeping your way to the top. And the only difference is they're making it look like one side is just, you know, offering, you know, something, whereas it's also people in power who are taking advantage of it. But what I'm saying is everybody knew about all this salacious stuff from back then. But now there seems to be almost a sense of a lot of this stuff. It's almost like this, the skeletons in the closet are being dragged out.
Good.
So I know that's a good thing. But just as an example, we will go into this in a different episode about the P. Diddy, or formerly known as Puff Daddy, scandal, because his what's happening with his case, and it's still developing, is there are some similarities with the Epstein case. And especially in terms of the fact that he is alleged to have had hidden cameras in his house and has filmed very famous and prominent people, not just musicians, but, you know, like celebrities, like politicians, in compromising positions. And it's not just some sex act. It's apparently involving minors, involving possibly animals. So this is...
Allegedly.
So this is, again, a similar... And by the way, Hugh Hefner was implicated in something like this as well.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So that means it's... I think there's something much bigger happening than just a few sleazy people in the industry. It seems to be a hugely structural
issue. Hierarchical.
Hierarchical, and it's a structural problem. And so they can always say, oh, we've, you know, tinkered around with the edges and we're going to fix a few things up here. But when you have an industry that's run on this type of stuff, and this is what we're hoping to go into this podcast, is to try and look at all this grime in there. Because we know a lot of people who want to work in the media industry, but then who can sometimes be unaware of...
The depravity,
we can talk about the sexual depravity, but there's also the business side to it, screwing people over, basically.
Well, like with AI.
Yes, yeah, that's another thing we'll go into as well. But yeah, the kind of the shifts and changes that are happening in this industry, and I personally, there's just, you guys tell me what you think, but I really think that part of the reason why a lot of these scandals are coming out now and becoming a form of entertainment is because the industry, and particularly Hollywood, is no longer producing anything of value. Like movies, like everybody complains about how movies are shit today. Compare them to movies 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, where cinema, at least they had something to say. Whereas now we're inundated with, lots of people would say, you know, rubbish. Things. There's nothing original anymore. And so they're not able to hide the glitz and glamour of Hollywood. Like there was a mystery about film stars. There was, you know, Tinseltown, the city of lights. Everybody knew there was a dark underbelly, but there was something glamorous about it. It just doesn't have any glamour. It just looks lame in a way. And I'll just say that I feel like because they can't produce anything of value, they're not able to cover up some of these scandals, and the scandals themselves are becoming entertainment.
See, it's really interesting. You're becoming very nostalgic, which is good, but you're talking about great films of yesteryear. Can you name some of those films? Because I'm trying to think in my head what that would look like. And all I can think of is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which has lasted, you know, decades. But at the same time, that was like when you have a look into that movie, it's actually quite depraved, especially when he kills all those kids. So,
well, there's the LSD scene when they're in the boat and everything.
Oh, so exactly. There's lots of dodgy shit in that too. Yeah.
There's something so deeply psychologically disturbing about Willy Wonka.
Should if read you look the for book. The clues, you know, scary. Yeah.
This brings up an interesting point. So what I'll say is, what is considered good cinema? Now, look, there's depraved stuff that always happens behind the screen. And I think that's what you've mentioned now is connecting it to that shows that this industry has always been depraved. Mm. It's always been there. But the difference is we look at, you know, there's a reason why things like Gone with the Wind, Casablanca, or even, you know, like more recent films. Let's say, what was that film? You mentioned Willy Wonka, but there was also
Wonka.
Oh, yeah, that's the remake that's coming out now. But if you look at, you know, films from the golden age of... Oh, one of my favorite films, horror films, The Exorcist. Now, that's a film that is quite reactionary, but I think it's really good cinema. Like, the way that we're able to tell a story... And the reason I bring that up is because they made its sequel that came out last year, and it was quite disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at, you know, what we're looking at is things like storytelling, things like having a... Like a movie's... ultimate message may be something that is something you disagree with, but the question is it good art? Was it communicated in a good way? Whereas now, if you look at films, if they're trying to communicate something, it's so like all art is propaganda, but the difference is, can you do it in a way that's you know, pleasant, that's good to watch, that makes you think? The stuff that's coming out now that's propaganda is so in your face that most people are getting turned off by it.
Yeah, because it doesn't allow you to think.
No, it's telling you what to think.
Yeah, exactly.
Content's an issue that might be one piece of the puzzle, but for me, the one thing that I can't shake, regardless of what sort of scandal it is, whether it's financial exploitation of a sexual nature or whatever, the film industry as a whole, or at least when you're making a film, it's hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
You have someone right at the top and you're going to have someone right at the bottom. And there's going to be a whole lot of people in between. And someone's going to answer to somebody and someone's going to answer to somebody else. The minute you start having anything like that, you've got power imbalances. You've got certain things that people can do that other people can't to make you do things. Hell, it might be that, hell, if you're on the same line, it's transactional.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got to look at the hierarchy and the way that things occur between human relationships to come to the source of this. I don't want to get too metaphysical or whatever or talk about human nature. But I think the problem here is like at the end of the day, you might have two people who are doing things together that might be inappropriate, but they maybe have consented to it. But at some point, one of those parties is not into it anymore.
Yeah.
And if the behavior continues and they can't get out of it, I'm just talking generally here, this is where the problems occur. There's other people who have never had a choice. There were maybe some people who had a choice and they thought they were playing the game, but they were just playing themselves.
Mm.
And then maybe years later they find out, yeah, maybe I should say something about that. It gets problematic there because it's murky, because at some point you were enabling the enabler to do things you probably shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah, but 9 times out of 10, it's because they felt like they didn't have a choice.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. Or you may not have known better because you were a minor. Someone gave me a massage. Didn't think anything of it. But now that I think of it,
that
40-year-old producer, guy or girl,
should never have touched me in the first place.
Should not have been doing that. Yeah.
I mean, that's there's a reason why.
This is what I'm getting at.
There's a reason why the industry, whenever they look for talent, they're looking for the youngest ones as well. I mean, part of it, obviously, because you can market and sell that, but also they're more easy to control and mold. And so that means you can extract anything you want from them. And I'm not just talking about sexual things. I'm talking about them agreeing to do things on set that might be dangerous, you know, like undermine their workplace conditions and labor laws.
Or working late hours, more beyond the
exactly,
thing.
Yeah. And so, because at the end of the day, the industry is built to turn a profit.
Yes.
And also the other factor I think that we will touch on is the propagandistic nature of it. I think one of the things that we should look into is even the roles that, you know, intelligence agencies, the government plays in shaping the narrative, because the idea that people just, you know, write scripts and studios decide whether they want the scripts or not, and then they decide to make the film. Remember, the money for a lot of these films are coming from big places. It's like, of course, independent films, you can have crowdfunding. But major releases, when there's a lot of money involved, it's tied with the stock market now. You can bet that they want to control what kind of message comes out. And so I think it'll be curious for us to see, you're going forward with this podcast, like once you go into those deeper, like those dark alleyways within Screen and Media, and you see, you know, what's actually going on, what type of businesses are happening back there, because we don't want this to focus just on the salacious sexual side. There's so much more. There's so much going on. I think that's the thing with the with some of these scandals, is when there's sex involved, like a lot of people pay attention to it. But remember, there's all kinds of, there's extortion rackets happening. There's murder behind the scenes. There is, blackmail. There's, you know, just dodgy business deals. There's unsafe workplace practices that are happening. And there's a veneer out there that this is, but I think that veneer is being slowly peeling away, which is that this is this great place to work. It is something that can attract younger people, thinking that, hey, this is a great place to, you know, you're in media, you can meet a lot of people, you could become famous, you can make money, all these different things.
The moment when the mask fell off for me, interestingly enough, was and help me out here, Will Smith.
Yes.
Where was it? Was it the Emmys, the Oscars?
The slap?
Yeah.
The Oscars.
That's when the mask fell away for me. Because he, in plain sight, broadcast on mass media to the entire world, was a man who physically got up and hit somebody. And the crowd didn't know whether to cheer, to clap, or to run.
Yeah.
Do you think it was staged?
No.
No, I don't think it was. No. And I think at the time people laughed because they didn't know what to do. And then the aftermath was, because he got cheered and then he ended up winning best actor. Yeah. And it was like one huge oxymoron.
I felt this was like, this is the best Twilight Zone episode I've seen in my life, man. Rod Serling, where are you? Pop out. Mm. And I'm just watching the curtain. And I'm just watching.
Nothing. And then after the math, that's when people started, and I think that's when the community started to revolt and went, hang on, he like...
assaulted someone?
He assaulted someone on TV and there was no police. There was nothing.
No.
And it was almost like, hey, that's permission for me to go up and slap someone, you know, and not get booked by police.
But I could see people in the audience, I swear this is just my imagination at play, but they're probably jumping on their phones to ask their PR agent or spin doctor, do I clap? Do I sit down? What do I do? The camera's on me. You know?
Yeah, don't know what to look.
Yeah, apparently that was the time where the Oscars, there was a slight bump in their viewership because it's been steadily declining over the last decade. It might be worth, in a future episode, we'll be talking about award shows as well, because not just awards, but also those film critics, because what they're saying and what they give prizes to is a deviation from what audiences actually like.
Well, we can also add in there Ricky Gervais, because he was, I reckon, one of the best presenters, because he just opened his mouth and just said whatever was on his mind.
He paid out big time on these
guys. Totally. Yeah. And I, like, from as a viewer, that was the best. And ever since then, the awards have, like,
Marina, go on. Yeah.
No, and totally dictated what should and shouldn't be said. And it's been boring as shit since then.
There's another one that I remember. Do you remember when Prince got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No.
He got up and he made this speech, right? Got to see it. And he pretty much paid out on all the studio heads. And he said to all these artists, he goes, look, you're some of the most talented, I'm paraphrasing here, he goes, you're some of the most talented people in the world in this room. He goes, but you're always going to get a minor stake. Some of you are going to do really well. Most of you won't.
Oh, it's telling the truth there.
Yeah. And you could see the producers like in that room looking down at their shoes. You know, when it's
we
cutting
should
to
find
them.
That clip.
And then there's other artists that are like, you could see they know the truth, right?
Yeah.
And he also tied it into the whole idea of like, because a lot of these artists are African American.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? We know the history of music and African Americans. We don't need to go into it. But he was pretty much saying right then and there, it's like, you can be better than this. You don't have to be a slave to the system.
Mm. You know? Look at Beyonce going, past the genres, and now she's like number one in country.
So, okay, I'm glad you brought up Beyoncé, because I think, you know, we look at these different instances of people, it's almost like they're being authentic. But the more and more that I've been delving into media, it's everything is managed. In fact, usually when people go off script to the point where it becomes really embarrassing for the industry, they get blackballed or blacklisted. So sometimes even the stuff they say is scandal, is to try to create a scandal or to create a buzz, is in a way stage managed. So that's why I'm wondering what is actually real and what isn't anymore.
It's
so
all like smoke and mirrors, mate. The whole industry is that. Yeah.
Nothing is real and nothing is fake.
Because the thing is, could you...
Are you real?
Okay, let's not get too postmodern.
No, but like right now, what we're talking, right? We've got a role.
Yeah.
We're moderating and talking. But on another level, I'm like a fucking idiot down the road doing things I shouldn't be doing. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not serious, but what I'm trying to say is there's a duty and a role.
Yeah.
And then there's you, but you could have multiple identities.
Yep.
And you can also have multiple vices. Sometimes you're the best person in the world, but they might catch you on the worst day and you're the worst person.
But the difference is
I'm not defending things. I'm just saying.
Taylor Swift.
The difference is, because remember.
Yeah, she's godly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we'll wait and see. But the thing is, by the way, we might want to go into her as well, because there's a lot, like the kind of phenomena, because some of these, you know, musicians and pop stars who come out, sometimes they come out of nowhere and you're wondering, okay, because you have to get a certain amount of play in the radio or in streaming or in television.
She didn't come out of nowhere.
Well, no, it's not even just coming out of, not just her, but what I'm saying is there's some of these stars, the way they're pushed onto people, they're making it pretend as if it's an organic thing, like the public wanted.
Yeah.
Whereas some of them are obvious.
Manufactured.
And can I just use the word psyop sometimes? I wouldn't be surprised if someone like Harry Styles is a psyop, a psychological operation.
Who's he working for?
Well, that's something we'll delve into.
Mossad.
we'll bring up things like Mossad and CIA as well into this podcast. But going back to Beyonce,
we
like
can tell who's got the tinfoil in this trio.
I'll get all of you a tinfoil hat once this is over. But the reason I bring up, because you mentioned Beyonce and I wanted to go to that, is because we talked about P. Diddy just before.
Mm.
People are now looking at...
Sorry, I have to correct you. It's Diddy.
Okay, it's Diddy now.
It was Puff Daddy, then it was P. Diddy.
And I was Diddy.
It's Titty.
Did you say
it will be in a couple of months.
Freudian slip, sorry.
Yeah, of course it is. But because now people are looking at Jay-Z, and they're because the thing is, if Diddy sings, all kinds of names that come out. If you think if Jay-Z is involved, you think Beyonce is not involved. Apparently, J-Lo admitted that she had to, like, Diddy asked her to carry a gun with her at when they went to clubs, and even his ex-girlfriend who he did that settlement with. So there's a lot of people involved and implicated in this. So I think when, you know, this is what I'm saying.
The guy did gangster rap. He's got to be packing.
Well, it's not just that, because some of them can do gangster rap and not have anything to do with it. That's just another...
Facade.
Facade, yeah. Because if you look at rap from the 90s...
Well, they became it. They bought into their own hype.
They bought into it. But if you look at the history of rap, it had a lot more to do with the struggles. Like the whole genre came out of, you know, a working class community that was destroyed by a highway project.
Yep.
And so when it's in the 90s is when it got really corporatized and was taken away from that. And then all these people who were posers, basically, who were setting up these fake feuds amongst themselves.
Yeah.
And it just became a completely commercialized sort of thing that's all about material wealth and sleeping with women. And so it was completely removed. The political side was removed from it.
And,
it became a product.
Don't forget the rims, car rims.
The what?
The rims, the cars. You know, you put rims on the cars. Spinning, gold, silver.
Okay, now I get what you mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what I think is what I meant by saying, like, you know, all isn't as it seems, is because everything is so manufactured that even the people who are, like, we think are being authentic, oh, they're breaking character and exposing Hollywood, I feel like even they're faking as well.
But I agree to an extent. The problem here is you've misunderstood what an artist is.
Yeah.
As a musician, they're playing a persona and a role.
Mm.
We're not meant to think that they're real gangsters that are cruising down the freeway, you know, Uzis and pulling people's cards. It's kids think it's real, but adults know it's not. You know, it's people who lack insight to distinguish a real person versus the artist's persona. We know that with most music, it's a persona. Okay, I know there's some artists that represent themselves as authentic, and, you know, if they were singing about struggle and other things, they are as they are. But something like gangster rap, we which made out like it was legit. We found out that it wasn't, you know, for most of the most famous ones anyway. Yeah. Let's be honest, man. If they were rapping about slinging drugs and everything, why the fuck would they even bother wanting to release records? They'd make more money doing drugs.
Yeah, true.
Let's be honest. I fucking know if they would.
Won't get as much fame, but
yeah. And wouldn't have to cut in a studio either.
I mean, so what I meant about, because that thing about rap, it's like, you know, most people know that it's part of a facade. The same thing when it comes to any of these, like we talk about them being manufactured. That's very true. But what I mean by saying that the people who, you know, stand to, like who is that guy who, was it Eliza Wood? It was an actor who...
Oh, yeah.
Exposing...
Hobbit.
Yeah, but is he the one that talked about the pedophiles in Hollywood?
I don't know.
No, I don't know that one.
So to me, you might need to fact check that.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Can someone have a look at that?
Yeah,
but while I'm at it, it's because when you say, like, you know, you're exposing things like, oh, Hollywood is unfair. They only give scripts to certain people. Like, they talk about, you know, the seedier side of... Like, not so seedy side. As in, like, they talk about how it's unfair and they can expose that. But then when it comes to people who talk about the really dark shit that happens in there, those are the people that I'm saying are not given a platform. Like they have, you know what you have?
He did.
He did.
He did.
Elijah said there was a major pedophilia problem.
Yeah.
That was back in 2016.
By the way, have a look at his filmography. See how many films he's done.
Corey Feldman is also the original one too. He comes out every couple of years out of the woodwork and he goes, I'm going to reveal names.
Yeah, but he never does. I wish he would.
Yeah, I wish he would too. Because we know that Corey Haim
died.
He had issues too. And it's alleged that he was molested on one of the sets. I think Lost Boys possibly. But it was...
Oh, was it Lost Boys?
Yeah.
I don't think it was the Goonies.
Yeah, everyone thinks it's like, oh, it's this and this person and whatever. And the thing is it's probably some random crew member that nobody knows whose name is or whatever.
But what I meant by some of these people who are... I'll use the word controlled opposition. You know, people who can speak out against the industry, but they're controlled and restrained in a certain way.
Well, the problem is that a lot of it, you need evidence. When you make an accusation, you better be prepared.
Yeah, but we're not a courthouse here.
But America's a very litigious society, unfortunately, or fortunately, the way you want to look at it. But when it comes to civil...
Yeah, but we can speculate. Like, that's... Like, speculation, like, we can always say allegedly and speculate.
Yes. And it's not only Elijah Wood, it's also Denzel Washington and Mel Gibson, who also speak about the Hollywood dark side. They actually just... did this
interesting because
a couple of weeks ago
they're born again Christians virtually these two.
You know what I'd be interested to see is the filmography of these people once they started speaking out, because once you start speaking out about, like, let's say that there are certain things that Hollywood and the media industry don't mind you knowing about, which is, you know, like every, like they don't mind you knowing, okay, there's some bad shit that happens, but they don't really want you to know the very seedy underbelly, like the actually, like the things that just removes the glitz and glam and makes it harder for them to make money. That's the main thing.
Well, if it was a Hollywood movie, they'd come out, reveal all the names, everyone would be locked up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but the thing is, again, now we remember we mentioned things like Epstein and Diddy and all these people having hidden cameras, and there's possibly a blackmail operation happening. It makes it harder for people to name those names at any point. So there's a much wider network. And the thing is... I think this
is the thing, though. See, like, I don't want to be the contrarian, right? But let's take another angle at this. We see social media as a means for people to vocalize and speak out and say, this happened to me and it's a problem and we need to fix it. But at some point, we've got to accept that social media is in this omnipresent medium that commands or forces things to happen. We have to accept that there's rule of law. There's authorities that can investigate this sort of stuff. I mean, why don't we just leave it up to them? I mean, really, the social media can cause more problems. If people are making allegations and stuff, it's harder to find jurors. There's information that gets out there that potentially could not be put in as evidence because it's become tainted or whatever, or the means that it was accessed. It's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you have a tool here that people can unite around and acknowledge and say, we need to solve this problem. But at the same time, it can actually impede proper change via means and mechanisms that already exist, whether it's in law enforcement, public policy, or the industry policing itself. Yeah. I don't know. It's something that I'm just kind of, it's just something that I've just kind of realized at the moment.
No, I think
should there be a court of public opinion, or there at some point we've got to say, you know what, we've done our bit, we've brought attention to it. Let the professionals come in.
I think
in.
There should be a court of public opinion, but maybe it should come out after a court case, because you're exactly right. As soon as that's a lot of juries are dismissed because they've Googled something and they're supposed to know absolutely nothing walking into a court. The problem is when... The problem is, though, is if someone goes through the court of, like the whole Johnny Depp and
Amber Heard,
mm-hmm. that should never been out in public opinion, because it was between them two, between court, and that was it. And I seriously think all the hoo-ha had absolutely swayed what actually happened in court, because do not tell me that the jurors had no idea what was playing out on social media.
Yeah, I think when we, like, look, in an ideal world where, because it is important to have those court systems, the process, what we call natural justice, but I think another thing that actually gives that weight is whether people have faith in it. And maybe at some point people did, but how many people do you seriously think have faith that all these, you know, like people within these industries who have committed, you know, horrible acts, that they'll be brought to trial and brought to justice? Do you think people have faith in that?
That's not true. No, because if that was the case, then what's his name wouldn't be in jail.
Harvey Weinstein.
Correct.
He's the tip of the iceberg. So he was like the fall guy.
But my point is that if you can't believe in these systems, I'm not saying that they work all the time. They're probably the best thing we've got. But do you really want to chuck it out into the court of public opinion? We see how that turns out.
No, we know that both are bad. Yeah. But I think the problem is that when people are given these two limited choices and neither of them are working, people either tune out or they see this stuff as a form of entertainment now. It's a salacious, you know, sleazy tabloid stuff. Because the actual truth of the matter is most people don't have any faith that the rich and powerful will ever be brought to justice. It's been like Epstein in a way. Okay, I don't want to go too much into this, but there's a lot of people that don't really believe he killed himself.
Oh, it was awfully convenient in many people's perspectives that, you know, a guy of this sort of importance didn't have eyes on him 24/7.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that's evidence that something went awry, but it's very interesting.
I think he did kill himself because he would be the type of person that would not want to face anything.
Yeah,
and dead or alive. Took out the easy option.
Yeah, and also too, you know, it could be that it could be as simple as, man, the cops who were watching him had to go to the toilet.
Look, there's a part of it which is that a lot of these institutions are also understaffed because of budget cuts, and so sometimes that can slip. I think
maybe they didn't give a fuck and they just wanted him to off himself.
Yeah. I think there's a possibility that it both might be true. Like, they gave him the option to kill himself. As in, you could do it yourself because, let's face it, once you go through this, you're not going to have a life.
Anything's possible.
People will be out to get you before. But look, this is the thing. This is the kind of speculation we don't know. But the point that I'm making is that people... Most people don't seem to have much faith in the media industry itself. They realize that, okay, you people are full of shit. There's all these abusers that you're hiding. The movies and the music you produce is crap. The culture is now turned to shit. People seem to be much more entertained and glued to their screens when viewing these scandals that are coming out about Hollywood.
They want real life.
Yeah, they want real life.
They don't want movies anymore.
People still like some good. I'm sure people still want some good art. It's just we can't imagine it anymore.
I'm part of a Facebook group which is like Mums of the Hills, and there was a lady who wrote. I've got a screenshot of it. A lady who wrote that she had the best husband in the world because they could hear a domestic dispute next door. And they could hear police next door. And so they put their ears to the window. They had their eyes to the window because they loved the reality of it. And she was posting about how entertaining it was to see someone else call the police over a domestic dispute. And that ties into Married at First Sight, Survivor, all the real life dramas that are happening in Hollywood. We would rather watch that than watch a movie on screen.
You know why I think you might have a point there is because, like what Alex just mentioned about, you know, the legal system, having faith in that, it's almost like because people have lost faith in those systems to hold people accountable. They've lost faith in media in actually being able to produce anything of value. So they're looking for entertainment and anything else they can find. Like, you know, we've seen these instances where something horrible is happening in public and people are filming it and live streaming it instead of intervening. I'm not saying that that's... I don't agree with this whole, like, oh, people are inherently evil, but I think we are conditioned through society. And there was a horrible case that happened, this is probably maybe less than a decade ago, where there were these two young girls, went off with some guy. The app Periscope was used, but there was drugs involved, and apparently the guy, I think, was trying to have sex with this girl. He ended up raping her, and the other girl was live streaming it instead of doing anything, and she was getting all these likes and, you know, people viewing
it. Oh my god.
Yeah, and that was maybe 6-7 years ago, probably a little bit later, so you can see how far the culture has, like, come to the point where it's like we just, you know, mentioned before, what was the phrase, are we entertaining ourselves to death?
Yeah
Postman, Neil Postman pretty much said that.
And what year did he say that?
85.
Jesus.
I'm pretty sure, but that was when the book came out, so could have been saying it for a while. It was referring to television, but it applies aptly to more appropriately to social media. You know, sometimes I wonder, like, it's okay to amuse ourselves. I don't think that's a terrible thing. What you choose to use to amuse yourself is the point of contention here. But imagine, not to sound like John Lennon, but imagine if all the amount of energy and time that is spent on social media in a given day or a week or a month or years was dedicated to, I don't know, fighting cancer, scientific endeavor, getting to know your neighbor. I think the world would be a better place. I'm sorry.
No, that's true that it would be, but I think, you know...
Because social media just doesn't seem to be so social no more.
No, it's not. But I think what it's doing is it's something that hits your dopamine receptors.
Yeah.
Like it's triggering something. So I think there's almost like a sense of alienation and loneliness that people are feeling. And we're filling it up with, you know, crappy entertainment, crappy food.
But look at the way it's designed. A lot of these apps are like a casino. Flashing lights, fucking doom scrolling, you name it. Sorry, I'm swearing a lot
endless
today.
Endless screen,
that's
all right.
But there was someone who came out and said, who was it? That the medium is the message, right?
Medium is the message, I heard
classic
that.
Old saying. So the medium actually shapes the message. So, like, for example, Twitter. It has a limitation for how much you can write. Do you think you can have a very nuanced discussion on Twitter without it turning into a flame war? Probably not, because of the nature of the medium, right? The things you would say over a mobile screen versus if you had that person standing in front of you might be two different things, okay, in terms of respect levels. But, you know, we've probably reached that point where the medium is just like handicapped people. Like, I remember forums and IRC channels in the mid to late 90s and 2000s. People would flame each other there too, and you get all sorts of clowns. But you could actually have a discussion. You could actually have a nuanced discussion that you could leave a message for someone else and then they'd get back to you. Or you could do it in real time. You don't really kind of see that now.
Yeah.
Not with certain things that have like 15-second limits or a cap on what they say. And you could just argue, well, it ain't that demo. It ain't that demography that appeals to. But, you know, that medium, that structure, the internet doesn't have to be the way it currently is with, like, the version of a casino we see these days, where we need everything given to us in 5-second sound bites. I think it could be a lot better. That's why I was saying, imagine what it could be like if it favoured things like, you know, learning and endeavour and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, like, in future episodes, we'll be looking at, you know, the incentive structures behind all this, because I think when people want to look at media right now and it's like, why is it the way that it is? You know, why are we not like, what was the film?
Money.
Says, we know everybody knows it's money, but the question is, why has it gotten so bad now to the point where
the machine is lean and mean. It's worked out by the numbers, by algorithms, by human psychology, how to get the most gains.
Oh, exactly.
We've reached critical, as you were saying before, we've reached critical mass.
Critical mass. Yeah. Well, I mean,
and a bit of human nature, because we love, as some people are saying, a bit of scandal and things, because these are things that are just projections of what we see in real life. True. Like bullying. Now you got online bullying.
Yeah.
You know, you got, yeah.
And when we see it being done to other people, then we feel better about ourselves because it's not aimed at us.
Like that person that was listening through the wall, because, hey, it's not my relationship hitting the wall. Yeah.
Exactly. You know? It sort of, you know, reinforces a very individualist sort of nature of the world we live in. Not just the world, it's basically capitalism. It's very individualist, and this sort of reinforces that. Just satisfy your immediate need right now. And it's gotten to the point where we do that by consuming crap.
But that behaviour is basically a Western type behaviour, the individualism. So if you have a look at, I think it's Hofgander, I'll find the thing. But Hofgander basically has individualism. So America, Australia, England, high individualistic attitudes, but you go to Thailand, you go to China and Japan, and they're more community-based. And, yeah.
I will say that that's something that the individualism, I think it's part of, you know, the wider market, because it starts to spread. I'm from India, and one thing I've noticed is in the big cities, like, you still go to many, like, small towns, rural areas, there is a lot more community-based, and it's still there to the cities to some degree, but as the market starts to expand, general markets, and the culture of the...
Cause global.
The culture is global now. American culture is the global hegemon, along with, you know, the power they can project. And so that type of individualism, you're starting to notice it in those towns. Like, even where it used to be normal for three generations of a family to live under one roof, you're looking at more and more younger people that are now choosing to live separately and maybe next to their family's home. But you know what that means? It means that if you have three generations under one roof, you just need to buy one, maybe two TVs, one or two washing machines. Whereas when you start to break up, it's better for the market.
The market loves
it. The market loves it. And same thing with cinema as well. They need that type of atomization. But I was going to suggest to you guys, we've gone on a bit now about a variety of different things about what we'll be talking about in the podcast. We've jumped all over the place, but we've done that because there's a lot to cover here. We're a bit excited to do this, and we will be having more streamlined episodes where we focus on specific things. I think one of the main things that I would like to do going forward is if we look at different, like what we call this podcast, The Dark Alleyways. We are going to be looking at one alleyway each episode of some specific subject.
Many, many different alleyways there are to go down.
Yeah, that sounds good. So, okay, I guess we'll start to wrap it up now, because I think we've given somewhat of an introduction. I hope that it was entertaining enough.
Was this an introduction or was this an actual episode? Well, for about 45 minutes.
I think there's like 20 minutes in there that we can use.
Okay. Cool.
No, oh, come on. Let's just put the whole thing in there, because it's, you know, it gives people an intro to us.
Let me think about that.
Okay, fine.
The cogs are turning. Delayed.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.